Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, June the 13th, 2021. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Well, welcome into another edition of the show, just a couple hours after the Mets took 2 out of 3 from the San Diego Padres this weekend. Disappointing loss here on this Sunday. Mets a little shorthanded in the bullpen. Some questionable moves about regarding the bullpen decisions by Luis Rojas. But all things being said, what a great weekend of baseball. Great weather. Mets taking 2 out of 3 from one of the better teams in the National League. And really, where we are now, you know, as we come out of the let's survive and advance mindset type of situation with the makeshift Mets, the replace the Mets, as we head into the heart of June here, the Mets, what are they, 32 and 25 now? They are 7 games over .500. They're 6 up in the loss column on the Phillies, 3 games back. The Phillies are 3 games back. Miami's, Atlanta's actually 8 games back. And Miami and Washington are double digits back in the loss column. I'm talking about the loss column here. Believe it or not, the Mets are at a point where it's time to make a run. They didn't just survive the makeshift Mets and the replace the Mets. McNeil is a week away. Conforto not too far away. I'm still concerned about Nimmo and J.D. Davis, but the emergence of Billy McKinney and how Peraza and some of the bench mob like Pilar and Villar have come through make me feel comfortable with those guys taking a little bit more time. I'm particularly worried about Nimmo because it looks like he has a torn ligament there. But funny as it is to say, here we are, the range of emotions that we've gone through from the middle of May right after the Tampa series when McNeil and Conforto go down, and it's like, are there danger signs ahead? Is this about to collapse? How can the Mets just hang in there and just, you know, not get buried, to not only surviving with the makeshift lineup, but thriving and learning a little bit about guys like Billy McKinney and Jose Peraza, guys that are pieces maybe of a bench that could give guys a day off when everybody's healthy and potentially even, in some cases, provide better defense in the late innings, because that's one of the biggest surprises from the Mets this year is their defense, albeit positioning has something to do with it, but I think you could clearly see that guys like Villar and Peraza, you know, McKinney in the outfield are upgrades over what was there before, you know, with Nimmo, so to speak, and even Mason Williams in center. So funny how we get into this stretch where now the Mets, there are no more days off, you know, provided that the weather cooperates and there's no more COVID shutdowns. I don't think we'll see any COVID shutdowns anymore. I think that's way in the past. About 29 games in 28 days, a couple of doubleheaders coming up later this month. And believe it or not, I think the Mets are well-positioned because of the 7-inning games. it actually, those games help the Mets in a crazy way because they're not going deep into the game with their starters. You saw that with Luke Casey today, and that's going to be a big problem. I think even with Peterson getting knocked out early, Luke Casey, they won't go the third time around the lineup. You may even see, you know, big sigh relief, Jacob DeGrom is feeling okay from the tendonitis, but let's face it, Jacob DeGrom is probably an 80-pitch pitcher right now. I mean, that's probably where he is. They're not going to push him. I mean, hopefully you see him get to 100 at some point, but I don't think you're going to see Jacob DeGrom go much more north of 100 pitches here in the regular season. I don't think you're going to see that. And I think the doubleheaders, the seven-inning doubleheaders, are actually a helpful thing for the Mets because it's four less in a doubleheader, it's four less innings they have to worry about that they have to go out there and plug and bridge the gap. And with Stroman and with DeGrom, if they pitch on any of those games, you very likely could get a complete game, something that doesn't happen. So crazy as it sounds, here we are. We're talking about the Mets making a run. Guys are getting healthy. There are going to be some decisions to make. I expect with McNeil coming back, I think Brandon Drury, who actually has options, will be the first to go. And then I think when Conforto comes back, Mason Williams will be sent down. Now, Mason Williams is out of options, so it's very possible he'll be picked up. I think Billy McKinney, who has no options, even though he has only a little over a year of service time, the Mets have a bunch of control on him, they'd lose him if they try to sneak him through waivers. So I think you may have, out of all of these replacements, found something here. And then the interesting thing is Peraza, who has been such a nice component piece. You know, when J.D. Davis returns, he may, and I think it looks like he has an option. I'm on roster resource. He may go back down, and that's good because, you want to be able to, keep him in the organization at least for the rest of this year and possibly bring him back up in September at some point, or you might need him depending on the health of various individuals. So there's a lot of decisions to be made, but what really is fun to see here is this is what it's all about. You know, you go out there, you build a team in the offseason, you talk about roster building, you speculate, you have all those during a cold winter day, all those dreams of what a team could be. And to see this weekend how the fans are coming back, I think there was like 30,000 or close to 30,000 on either Friday or Saturday. They're not quite raucous level, like playoff level City Field level yet, maybe not like the Nat series back in August of 2019, but the energy is back. You got the seven line out in center field, you got fans doing the wave, which I know may annoy some people, but it doesn't matter at this point. I can't criticize the fans because after all we've been through at this time last year, we had no idea if there was going to be a baseball season. We had no idea when the baseball season would resume. There was labor strife, there still is labor strife, and so many negative things going on around the world. Sports was completely, was taken away from us. So now that it's coming back and that access to ballparks is coming back, I think there's a better appreciation by the fans for that. I hope to believe that the players will appreciate it more. I know that there's going to be some interesting dynamics with the Players Association and the owners this offseason, and I wonder if there is labor strife, how the fans will react to it, especially considering that, you learn to live without something, and sometimes when that happens, it's dangerous because you don't always come back. And even though I think there'd be more potential for capacity, and I don't know how it is with vaccinated sections and all that other stuff, I'm not really going to even get into that. I really don't care. There is a capacity for a few more fans, maybe 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 more fans at Citi Field. They weren't there. I don't know if that's a part and parcel to health and safety. It probably is. Or also to economically, people still, out of work and potentially, obviously the cost of things are going up exponentially. So disposable income is certainly going to be something that's not necessarily going to be as bandied about as in other times. So we have to be careful here, but it's good to see the fans coming back, and it will be interesting, that dynamic, as we get later into the season. So we always talk about, well, now we're in, what do the Mets need? And what's funny is, as I look at the challenge ahead with all these games in a short span of time, with the fact that they really are going to be relying on the bullpen, I think it might be necessary to get another bullpen arm. and it's going to be necessary to get another starter, and that's going to be the harder of the two. I'll tell you that. You'll get a bullpen arm. You'll get somebody. You'll get a veteran, experienced bullpen arm, and I don't think it'll cost you a lot. But getting a starter is going to be rough, and it was just a couple of weeks ago we were here talking, and I was like, you know, Carrasco's on the way back. Syndergaard is probably right behind him or right there with him. We're not expecting them to be top of the rotation guys. They're going to be very helpful, but they're not saviors because the team is in good shape. And then you get a double whammy. You get, bam, Syndergaard's not rehabbing well from Tommy John. He's now probably not going to be back until September, if that at all. Bam, Carrasco's having trouble rehabbing that hamstring. You know, when you hear some kind of platelet injections you're getting, that's never a good sign. Who knows when he's coming back? Now you're talking trade deadline, maybe. You know, it doesn't sound like he's anywhere close, and he's got to get rehab starts in. And let me tell you, you start getting into July, the minor league season goes into early September, but it goes by quick. You need some minor league starts under your belt. You know, I don't believe in simulated games. So now you're staring down the barrel of, well, you got these three really good starters, DeGrom, Stroman, Taijuan Walker. I don't like the DeGrom tendonitis, but look, they're going to have to manage it. I know he's had, ulnar nerve situations. Tommy John in his career, he was hurt back in 2016. Hopefully nothing's percolating. You got to trust that the guy knows how to take care of himself. The Mets certainly have been conservative with injuries, and they're going to be conservative with his pitch count. So as long as you have those three guys, okay, you'll navigate the back end. But that's going to get harder and harder, especially when you have the number of games in the number of days. There's no more, like this week you had two off days. So it's not as big of a deal when a David Peterson gets blown out of, you know, gets his doors blown off and he pitches a couple innings and you got to have a bullpen game. It's going to become a big deal when you're staring down the barrel of doubleheaders. Yeah, you got Yancy Diaz and Sean Reed Foley and maybe Zepucki, and I think I finally got his name right because I heard, I think, Gary Cohen say Zepucki that potentially could, you know, help. And Tyler McGill is a name that we're starting to hear, although he's not on the 40-man, I believe. So, you know, that might be some kind of move that needs to be made there. I have to bring up the Mets 40-man at some point and see, but I think that he's not on the 40-man. So you have options, but, you know, guess what? You don't have experienced options, and all your options that are out there at any point could be, have their doors blown off in a given game. And I think what you saw out of Luke Casey and how he has improved is so important. I think they got to start pushing starters. I understand. I was so angry about the DeGrom start in Arizona. You guys heard that on a prior show. And I was so angry on Friday when he first got taken out. But then I heard the rationale and they want to play it safe. And it didn't sound like DeGrom was against being taken out, which is where the alarm bells went off even more for me. But I came to the realization after that start, I'm like, DeGrom is not going to go more than 80, 85 pitches. Now, he's so efficient that he could still do seven innings, but when you start to even now have DeGrom, the Grom starts maybe 12 to 15 outs out of the bullpen, depending on how he goes. And Stroman, once he gets to the sixth, seventh inning, sixth, seventh inning, you know that, you know, he's starting to expire out there on the mound. Believe it or not, Taijuan Walker's the guy that you think might be able to go deeper than all of them. And he's had a checkered injury history. So they are going to rely on their bullpen. My fear is that their bullpen will get burnt out. They push Familia too much today. What you saw this afternoon against the Padres, my fear is that that's kind of a harbinger of what could happen to this bullpen with overuse. And it starts with those four and five parts of the rotation where Luke Casey, it's just, hey, the Mets got to push him. Analytics be damned. Use common sense. You're down four guys in the bullpen. Peterson, very disappointed in him. Totally has taken a step back. Here's a guy that's had moxie in the past, was able to pitch through trouble. And what I see is a guy that is completely lost. And I keep hearing his stuff is good, process, this and that. But he's non-competitive, and that's a concern. What's even more disappointing is that about a month or so ago in Tampa, when he went into the eighth inning and pitched that masterful game against the Rays, a team that was, who knew, was just becoming hot as a pistol when the Mets played them, was kind of when they were starting to get really hot. So it wasn't like it was a second division club. It was a pennant-winning team on the road, And ever since then, it seems like he's been all over the map, and that's disappointing. So where do the Mets go? They have to go out and get a starter. And I know Jim Duquette was talking a little bit about this, but here's what I did. And I started to do this. And this is the exercise that I encourage you to do. So what you do is you go to FanGraphs. First of all, you start looking at teams like the Pirates and the Rockies and Texas and teams like that. You start to say, hey, Detroit, you know those teams are going to be out of the race. They're going to be looking to make deals. And the only you're not going to get a top-of-the-rotation starter. You're not going out and acquiring Zach Wheeler type. Let's face it. You know, not that they could get Zach Wheeler at this point. The Phillies are a contender. He's signed long-term. But you're not going to get a starter of that kind of impact. What you're going to get, and I think the poster child or the poster boy for the kind of starter the Mets could get is Kyle Gibson. And why do I say that? You're going to get a back-end-of-the-rotation guy, hopefully not signed to a long-term deal, not owed a tremendous amount of money, a team willing to, you know, part with them for something of a... You'll probably have to give up some kind of prospect, but nothing... You know, you have to give up a lottery ticket, but not a top prospect. And it's funny, all these years the Mets have had guys, especially guys on expiring contracts. I kept hearing how the Mets can't get anything because the guy's on expiring contract and no one's going to give up anything for him. Watch how the tune changes now. Well, the Mets are going to have to give up a lot to get him. Calm down. You know teams know that the Mets want to win, and they have a new owner whose edict is to win. But they also have a front office that, for all the criticism I could hurl at the analytic-driven front office, they're not stupid, and they know value. And although they made their first big splash, and even Andy Martino was talking about this on a podcast, the Shea Anything podcast, the Lindor contract was, I don't think you could put a value to 10-year contracts in any kind of analytics because they're bad no matter what you look at. It was an emotional decision. It still was rooted in some kind of analytical base value in terms of dollars per year. They're going to do the same thing with starters. They're not just going to throw prospects out there win at all costs. They're not going to just throw an Alvarez or a Beatty or guys like that out there. I think they're going to have to find the right mix of capital they're going to give up and return they're going to get. And I think Kyle Gibson, who's having a good year, 4-0, 2.13 ERA, historically has been slightly below league average pitcher, but he's a guy that in the American League Central was able to win 10 to 12 games. Look, he's a guy, historically, look at his average year. His average year is, 500 pitcher, 4.5 ERA, 6 innings, 3 runs. And maybe he comes over to the National League after pitching in the American League for, almost 10 years. And sometimes those guys with the pitcher still in play light it up there in the second half. You never know. It's always tricky with deadline deals because you don't know how those guys are going to adjust. And you really only have 8 weeks if it happens on July 31st. You don't have a lot of time to figure it out. It's not like it's April. Well, spend the first 60 days finding yourself. No, when you get a deadline acquisition, that's your piece that you need to get it done. Like I said, learning a team, we learned a lot about the Mets through Memorial Day and then some. Now what does this team need? They need health, and they're getting some of that back. They're getting a lot of that back. And they need a pitcher, and they probably need a reliever. And it would be nice, depending on the health of J.D. Davis and Nimmo specifically, maybe a bat would also be in play. But you know what? You can only get so much, and you only have so much prospect capital you could give up. And the Mets are trying to rebuild this farm system. So it may be one of those things where the best you're going to get out of the Mets that makes sense realistically is a Kyle Gibson type. I look at like a Matthew Boyd. He's a guy that's still controllable. 30 years old, he's still arbitration eligible. He's a guy that potentially, like a Joe Musgrove, could go over to the National League and with the Mets, and maybe they could do something with him. Hermen Marquez, get him out of Colorado. Now, he's signed to multiple years. He's owed 3 more years. You get a guy like Marquez, you're going to give up some prospect capital, and, it's going to impact whether you could sign Stroman next year, Syndergaard, so you better be sure that you're right on this, and this guy coming out of Colorado has something. Another guy I looked at, a veteran, I think the Mets actually have had some interest over the last couple of off seasons, Mike Minor. But, Mike Minor's also signed to a multi-year deal. He's going to get $10 million next year and $13 million. Then that option in 2023 is a mutual option if he gets traded. So You know, he's kind of like Kyle Gibson. He's a league average pitcher. He's had a couple of years where he's done better, but I think Kyle Gibson, to me, is the name to watch. And I have no inside information, but that's the kind of pitcher the Mets could acquire. And look, if Carrasco comes back and replaces, and Lucchesi is right now making a case that when Carrasco comes back, it's Peterson that's getting sent down. You know, right now, Peterson has a lot to prove over the next 6 weeks. And I'm not at all convinced Carrasco's going to be back by the trade deadline. And I'm not sure what you're going to get out of Carrasco. Because now he's got to build himself up. He's got to find it. It's such a tough situation. All of this leads to more bullpen usage, more potential for bullpen being overused and blown out by midseason. And if this team's bullpen reverts to prior years, they're in a lot of trouble. They don't have the starting pitching like they had in 2019. From 1 through 5, they were going to be able to get 7 innings of quality starts. They don't have that right now. And I don't think they're going to have that. And furthermore, this offense, now as it gets healthier, and I saw a stat that in June they're averaging over 5 runs a game. They're starting to creep up a little bit. They're not dead last in the league anymore. But I still question if it's an offense that could consistently score 5 runs. I felt like in 2019 they could when Pete was having the big year and McNeil and Conforto. And, you know, when even Todd Frazier had some moments, Rosario was pitching in. I don't know. And you look back, maybe it's just a gut feeling because the way they played in the second half. But, this team has the potential to be much better than that team offensively. J.D. Davis was huge in the second half and was very elite back then. But let's not forget Cano, who is very, they could use Cano's bat, guys. I know you guys don't want to hear that. They could use Cano's bat. I don't know if they could use his defense, but they could use Cano's bat. So, that's where we're at here. And I want to leave you with this because we're going to get to our guest, and it's a good one. It's our good friend Rich Mancuso from New York Sports Day. It's been a long time since Rich has been with us. You know, he covers the Mets for a long time. Also does a lot of boxing. So if you're a boxing fan, following Rich is always a treat. But I think back to an article that came out on Mets blog on SNY.TV. It's really SNY.TV. It's not Mets blog anymore. And it was Andy Martino talking about Brody Van Wagenen and the role he played in signing Jacob deGrom, which is a very undervalued contract. I mean, here we are on June 13th, and the guy's got an ERA of a half a run. I don't know when this is going to end, and I got to think that at some point we're staring down the barrel of a really bad outing that will normalize it. Because, I mean, come on, is a guy going to have an ERA under, 1.5, 2? I mean, even 1.5 is insane for a starter. I mean, usually you could say 1.8, 2. That's insane for a starter. Blake Snell had that a few years ago. That's the best you're going to see. And now you're talking about a run less than that? That's insane. But what we're seeing here with DeGrom very easily could have been torn away from us. And what we see with the excitement and the fans coming back and this feeling where the love for the Mets and the city is turning with all the stuff going on in the Bronx, with all the bad and boring baseball that they're producing over there. And I think a lot of the Yankee situation is things the Mets can learn from. Because sometimes, you got to stick with what you got. Don't just always go out there because a player becomes available like a Giancarlo Stanton. I'm off. That one is Mike Stanton. Here I am thinking about Mike Stanton. Giancarlo Stanton and things like that. Sometimes you got to take a step back and look at all the small moves the Mets have made this offseason. And it wasn't the plan. The plan was to get Trevor Bauer, not Taijuan Walker. And look at how Walker, right now, is outpitching Bauer for a fraction of the cost. We'll see where it ends on the year. Guys like Pilar and VR, and even it was Bill Madden, I think, was talking about it in the New York Daily News, where if you go out and get George Springer, which would have been a media move, you probably don't get the depth of a VR and a Pilar. So sometimes it's about the little things that you do, the little moves, not trying to hit the home run on every single acquisition. It's building a lot of component players throughout the team. And the Mets are able to do that, and they could continue to do that. But I feel things are changing. But this all would have not been part of our conversation right now if everybody in the media got their way, the Mets never hired Brody Van Wagenen. They decided to tear it down, which most people felt they should do after 2018. Trade DeGrom, go Houston Astros, Chicago Cubs, bare bones. And I was vehemently against it because they had the pitching that could compete and win, though that pitching is certainly frayed at this point with no Wheeler and Syndergaard hurt and out. Matt's gone. And, you know, DeGrom would have been the one guy they would have gone out and tried to trade, and they didn't. And it goes again to show you, you got to read analytics and the principles that come with it are important. But you got to have common sense. Just like today you had to have common sense and push Lucchesi a little bit. Common sense said after 2018, a rebuild from a brand standpoint, they were already heading in a position where the Yankees were overshadowing them. They would have lost another generation of fans. And now, because you did not do that, you put your chips to the center of the table. You leveraged a player agent who tried his hand at being a GM and were able to get a team-friendly contract. Let's see what happens on his re-up. But you may be building a whole new generation of Mets fans now. I mean, look, here we are. We have guys from the UK listening to this show. I hate to keep going back to that, but we have guys from the UK, and some of them started becoming Mets fans in 2019. They're not going to care about the Mets if they're coming into town and the Mets are 52 games out of first place. But, oh, the Brooklyn Cyclones got some great players that will help you in 2025. You could do both. And maybe the Mets are now. Because for every win you see on the big league club, you could go then after the game and look at Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty down in Brooklyn. And Tyler McGill now, who's up at Syracuse. There may be more talent here than we think. So it's really exciting. It's really exciting, and it all goes back to going for it and continuing to try to field a competitive team every year. And we will be denied this reopening, this baseball reopening. I kind of felt this weekend was a baseball reopening because of the attendance being bumped up, the weather finally turning and feeling more summer, and the Mets playing a really good team and taking 2 out of 3. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When I come back, Rich Mancuso, New York Sports Day. Let's hear what he has to say about the Mets and more right after this. Doc Gooden had many classic outings as a member of the Mets. What was his best? We asked the man himself when he joined me on the Talking Mets podcast.
I think it was 85. I was in L.A. I think the score was 2-0 or 3-0, and Gary Carter's catching me. I didn't throw a breaking ball until the 7th inning, and I remember the 9th inning, they got a couple guys. Might have been a base load they got on, or a couple guys got on base, and they had 3 lefties coming up. I think I struck 2 of them out, and then I think Terry Whitfield popped up in the game. I thought that was my best game, you know, looking back at it, just top of my head.
Listen to this and more at www.talkingmetspodcast.com. We're back, and friend of the show joining us, been a while, Rich Mancuso, New York Sports Day, Latino Sports. He's all over the boxing circuit, so if you're a big boxing fan, this is the guy to go to. And we're going to be talking some Mets baseball just a couple hours after the Mets take 2 out of 3 from the Padres. A little bit of a disappointing game here on a Sunday, but Mets are in a good place. Rich, welcome to the show. Now, at this time last year, post-Memorial Day, no baseball, all the uncertainty in the world, all the uncertainty when it came to whether we were even going to see a baseball season. How nice was it this weekend? Not only the Jacob DeGrom game, the crowd on Friday, seeing the crowd on Saturday. Even with the loss today, the ballpark was lively. It looks like that light at the end of the tunnel, we could, you know, we're here. You know, there's still some work to do maybe, but we're here. And, you know, even you have, you know, before you got on the air, you were talking about how we may even see you at the ballpark.
Yes.
Soon. So how you doing? It's nice to see some normal Major League Baseball.
it won't be normal till I get back there.
There you go.
I'm going to be back there. I'll be back there when I get back from my trip to Miami this coming week, cover of Teofimo Lopez title defense in Miami. I'll get back because I got to be in the loop. I won't be there as much as I was. There's still restrictions and, you know, the clubhouse is closed, and I don't think that'll open up again maybe till next year because basically the Mets are not at that 85% threshold. I think 16 teams, including them, are still not at that point. So That ain't happening. But to be back at the ballpark would be nice, back up in the press box, see the colleagues, and go on the field maybe before the game. If you can get a player or two, that's fine with me. But I've been in the loop. I've been in touch with everyone, and I know what's going on. And I'm glad that we have a baseball season and it's normalcy right now. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and I was saying in the open that in a crazy way, the last month, with all the injuries, at one point the Mets had 17 guys on the injured list. There's still some key people that are going to be out probably till after the All-Star break, guys like Carrasco and Syndergaard. Still a little bit of ways away with Conforto. McNeil maybe, you know, is in the on the horizon within the next week. But in a way, it created some resiliency within this team. And even after the loss today, they don't get fazed too much about it. Look, you know, they have a talent deficit. They play great defense, whether it's positioning or otherwise. The pitching has been outstanding. The bullpen's been really good. The starting pitching, especially the big three, have been great. And they scored just enough runs. And they're starting to score more. They're scoring, you know, about 5 runs a game this month, maybe a shade under. So in a way, the replace the Mets, the makeshift Mets, what we've seen over the last month, it may go down as a key point where this team really built its hard exterior and got going as a group.
Yeah, Mike, good point. And I'm glad you brought it up. I think every Met fan has to be content, has to be elated about the depth of this team. It's certainly a good predicament that any manager or team would have when the regulars all come back to full force, which is going to happen eventually. And you got to attribute that to this organization and how they rebuilt. And you, Sandy Alderson and Zach Scott, you know, they the GM turned to GM, who I believe should be made the permanent GM a matter of time. He's done an outstanding job coming out of the Red Sox organization. So they put the depth in place to this team. They made it a better defensive team. We've seen that. And pitching and the bullpen, except for today a little bit, because Familia might be a little overused. And they didn't have the arms they could have used to maybe get the sweep of the Padres. But if you're a Met fan and you looked at the first third of this season, you have to be very content. The starting pitching, at least those top three, and DeGrom, Stroman, and Walker. The back end may be a little suspect, although Casey's coming around. And Peterson reminds me of much of like a Steven Matz, and he's got to get better. Otherwise, they have to do something by the trade deadline. I think they will. That's a definite need. And this bullpen turnaround, which has been marvelous. I mean, just about everyone out of that pen has done their job. And if you were looking at this before the season, you still had your doubts about that bullpen. You might have had some doubts about the rotation, especially knowing that Carrasco and Syndergaard weren't going to be there. And you might have had some doubts, of course, still going in with the offense. But I can tell you the truth, Mike, a lot of these bench gang, as they're calling them, the bench,
they've been pretty good.
Far from expectation. And you really, yeah, you miss Conforto, you miss Nimmo, and you miss this one and that one, but you know, and JD, of course. But you know what? You really don't miss them that much because this death has helped this team hold first place all of May. And going into June in a division that has turned out to be far from better than expected, because those other teams are struggling as well. But first place this time in June, 3 games up in the division, I'll take it. Every Met fan will take it.
Absolutely. Rich Mancuso, New York Sports Day, joining us. You mentioned the bench mob and, you know, Billy McKinney, guys like that coming in.
What a
this
find.
Be some, yeah, he might be a find. You know, look, I know everybody loves Dom Smith, and he hasn't gotten off to the start that we expected. And let's face it, Dom had a good 50 games last year, but still had a lot to prove when the season went to the regular 162. McKinney has to stay, and there's going to be some tough choices. Peraza's good defensively.
Yeah.
Can you keep him on the roster? I believe he has an option. Mason Williams is out of options. You know, you may lose him. There's a lot of questions about when McNeil comes back and then Conforto comes back. I think McKinney finds a way to stay because he'll get scooped up, but it'll be interesting what they do with Peraza. And then it will be interesting as they get J.D. Davis back and Nimmo. I'm a little bit worried about Nimmo with this. It seems like he's got a ligament damage in his finger.
Yeah,
which is kind of he kind of leaked that out himself. You know, how will these guys adjust to not playing every day, like VR, Pilar, guys like that. But I think they're going to be playing a lot more than they even thought coming in. And that's why you go out and get these kind of guys. But it'll be interesting because there will be some tough decisions. I think McKinney stays unless something drastic happens. You know, we'll see about Peraza. We'll see about Mason Williams. Probably not. And so on. But it is interesting that he had Billy McKinney, who we never would have thought about, come.
No.
We never talked about him. In the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, they acquire him. Here he is, a big piece.
I think the Milwaukee Brewers, Mike, look at the box scores every day, and they say, why did we let him go like that?
Sure.
Great find by the Mets, and that goes to show with this front office and the ability to find the right players, how they turn this around, what they can do. This guy has power. We know that. We've seen it. Extra base hits, and you know what? He's a pretty good defensive outfielder as well. So he's a guy you got to keep in the lineup and a guy that's got to stay on the team. Now, I could see him very easily in that lineup every day. And a predicament just like the Yankees have with Miguel Andujar, that team across town. Because if a guy is giving you the offense and giving you the power and getting extra base hits, that ratio of extra base hits since he's been in the lineup is phenomenal with the number of games he's played. I don't have that in front of me, but it's pretty good. So you can't let him out of the lineup, and let alone if you keep him on the bench, he's got to get the playing time. This guy has to play every day. And when he plays every day, he's been shown. You know, when they picked up this guy, I'm going, you know what? A month ago, I said, who is he? I never heard of him. I really know much about him. Well, now we know who he is, don't we?
Absolutely. And a big stretch coming up. You know, ironically, here we are. We've been talking about the Mets staying afloat when this all went down, all these injuries go down. Stay afloat. Don't get buried. Here they are, even after the loss today and the Phillies beating the Yankees, they're three games up in the division. They're six up in the loss column. They have a lot of games they have to make up. But even if they lost the majority of their makeup games, they'd still be pretty much tied in the loss column. They're in really good shape. But now they got this push to the All-Star break. All these days off are going to come back now. They're going to get like one day off. I think it's 29 games and 28 days.
Going into the break, they don't have much.
They don't have much. So the bullpen's going to be tested. You saw today they were short. And, you know, they got
to. That's a concern. That's a major concern.
That's a big concern. And here's where they got to maybe change the mindset. I think this starts at the front office. I know Rojas is going to get the grief because he's the manager. But we know this is a collaborative effort. You got to push your starters a little more. Now, I understand DeGrom had the tendonitis. I was very annoyed on Friday when he came out. I was annoyed a couple of starts earlier when they pulled him against the D-backs.
And believe me, that's a concern.
That is a concern, and I think he'll manage it, and let's knock on a lot of wood here. But the concern there is that DeGrom is an 80-pitch pitcher I think you're going to see pretty much for the foreseeable future. That's six innings, maybe seven innings with him, but he's an 80-pitch pitcher. Lucchesi, they won't let him go more than five.
No,
he even said I need to go more than five.
And you don't know what you're getting out of Peterson. So,
and Peterson is a wild card. Even if you bought a Zapucki up or Jared Eichhoff, who knows how much you're going to get.
Those guys aren't ready, Mike.
Eichhoff is a foray.
They're definitely going to be out there. There's going to be a move or two by the trade deadline. They have to, because you bring up the good point. The back end in particular of the rotation doesn't go more than five innings. And you can't put that tax on a bullpen that's already been used. And they're performing, it's going to catch up to you. And I think today's game is an example of it with Jeurys Familia. He comes in, he gives up look, Familia's going to strike guys out, he's going to walk guys, but he's been more strikeout effective in the zone. Out of the pen this season.
They pushed
today,
him way. I mean, they pushed him too
much. They did.
He's a one-inning pitcher.
I would have went with Lucchesi another inning. He had it. And he's given the Mets some. His last three, four starts have been – they haven't been great, but they've been better. Right. And I think he could have went another inning and then not taxed the blunt pen so much. But Familia might be feeling it already. He's been used a lot. Though he's been effective up until today – they were on the verge today of sweeping the Padres, which would have sent a tremendous message, not only to the National League, but to Major League Baseball, the whole league. They were that close to sweeping the Padres. Didn't happen.
Yeah, they were. Yep. And I mean, it was tough. You know, you got to put some the old, you got to put points up on the board when you're shorting that bullpen, you know, four guys. But I'm an old school guy. I don't expect nine innings. I don't.
No. Well, old school, I like to push not like pitches. You're not going like to get nine innings. You're not going to get nine innings from anyone. Very few.
No, but Rich, I don't understand why you can't get six out of Luke. I'm not asking for a lot here. I'm asking six out of Lucchese.
You needed six.
Why can't I get 100 pitches out of DeGrom? All right, maybe now you got to be.
You know what I'm going to say, too. You know what I'm going to say, because I write about it all the time, tell you all the time, off the air. Analytics dictates that Lucchese couldn't go another inning.
Common sense, and you're right. But common sense says you don't have enough relievers today. You don't have enough relievers. Give him that one more inning.
I agree.
He's probably a guy. Bartolo Colon was very similar. Bartolo Colon was a guy that you didn't really want going through the third time in the
year. Right.
Same situation. But you know what? You have a unique situation. Sometimes common sense has to be blended.
Especially,
and I think it's common sense says for me, he's not a two-inning pitcher. He never has been.
Especially when you didn't have Castro available and you didn't have May available and Diaz wasn't available. So you needed to go another inning with Lucchese, definitely. And again, I think that's it cost him a sweep of the Padres. Look, early in the season, still one-third gone. A sweep would have been nice, but now it's the Cubs coming in. And the Cubs have been struggling, but the Cubs are also still a viable team in that Central Division that will vie for title. And look, the Mets need as many of these games as they can, at least take the series, because they're not going to hold on to this division lead. They got to do that because they're not going to be in the wild card. The wild card's not coming out of the East. We know that. It has to be the Mets winning the division or no postseason again.
Yep, absolutely. And I'll tell you another thing that I'd like to see with some of the guys coming back is keeping this infield defense somewhat intact. What that might mean, and this is not a knock on Jeff McNeil's defense, but look at Luis Guillerme on Saturday. Peraza has been very good defensively in his absence. You know, I'm not picking on Dom here. But Dom has not shown that he's produced offensively to the point where you have to have him in the lineup. And he's a liability defensively. You can put McNeil in left. You could keep the infield, especially when Stroman's out there. You don't want to do it all the time, fine, but you got to do it when Stroman's out there. But I think the infield defense has been so important. And one of the things about the makeshift Mets, the replacement Mets, is that the defense has been an asset. Now, yes, it could be analytics and positioning, so you can't criticize analytics on one and not give them the credit on another. But I think now we got used to, hey, what a good defensive team can do. They're not going to score exponentially more runs with Dom in a lineup. I'm sorry.
Not right now.
Dom, I put McNeil on the outfield and left like in 2019, and I keep the infield defense. And Dom may have to sit a little bit, and that's
he might have to.
You know, no DH.
Right.
It would be different with a DH.
Right.
But the defense to me is so important.
It's hard to understand why Dom is struggling like this. I mean, 60 games last year. You can't go on a 60 game season to say this player has really become what he is. And I'm not knocking Dom, and that's because I'm not partial to him. I know him. I haven't talked to him, but he's a different hitter. You see him approaching the strike zone, and his at-bats are completely different. I think he's chasing too much.
Way out front.
I mean, he's it's just not Dom Smith that we saw last year and towards the tail end of 2019, Mike. And I don't know how he gets out of this. I don't know how he gets out of it. But boy, is he a viable and important part of that lineup if he's going to stay in there, because he provides the production, the power. Defensively, well, we know that. But his bat has been so important to this team the last year or two. And right now, you'd have to sit him. I think it's time for Dom Smith that he has to sit. I don't think he'd like the idea. I don't think it's something that the Mets really want to be in a position to do. But I think Dom Smith has to take a seat a while and try and figure this out.
Rich Mancuso, New York Sports Day, Latino Sports, a guy that's all over the boxing circuit, longtime friend of the show, wanted to get him on. What a great weekend here of Mets baseball. There was so much stuff to talk about. And we're now, when we go and debate and discuss and talk about team building all off season. This is what it's all about: watching the games, having fun. Summer's getting underway, and this is what it's all about. But the Mets do have needs, and I vacillate because just a couple of weeks ago, if you had were on the show, I'd say, you know what, Carrasco's in the front view mirror. Syndergaard's going to be back soon. You know, they're not required to be aces or to be saviors. We just need them to slide in at the back end of the rotation. A bat is what they're going to need. That's what they're going to need. But you know what? I'm wrong because now the injuries, I'm still worried about JD and Nimmo because they're weird injuries. And I said that, weird injuries that are going to be long lasting. They may still need a bat, but more importantly, they need a starter, at least a starter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's trickier because
it's hard to get,
and you don't want to get ripped off. You don't want to do a James Shields for Fernando Tatis Jr. type of deal. You know, everybody talks about Kelnick, but that guy today that hit a grand slam,
he
was basically given away, and nobody talks about it. Jared Kelnick hasn't even, you know, can't even be a fly on the you-know-what of Tatis' fanny.
Right now, he's an afterthought for Mets fans because he's not doing
absolutely.
It.
But I know Jim Duquette talked about this, but there was some names. So what I've done is I started looking at some second division clubs. I started going up and down some of the better performers so far this year and say, who's realistic? So some of the names I came up with is Germán Márquez of Colorado, Kyle Gibson out in Texas, you know, maybe Matthew Boyd out of Detroit. Not going to be cheap, any of these guys. Look, these teams know the Mets want to win. They know that they need a starter. So guys like Alvarez and Beatty, those names are going to come up. Zapucki's name is going to come up. Who knows who else? Maybe Peterson's name comes up. I don't know. But is there a name that you're looking at? It's very early, but I'm starting to marinate on certain names.
Yeah.
And obviously some of these guys have contracts that may extend past this year, which could impact them re-signing Stroman, re-signing Syndergaard. It's not just about this year. So are there any names that you're marinating on out there?
Well, I really haven't looked at it to the extent that you have. A guy like Justin Sheffield I would love to see. You know, Seattle Sheffield. That's one guy that maybe, I like Sonny Gray. He didn't work out in New York here with the Yankees, but the Reds are, they're making a move right now. So I don't know if the Reds would part with Sonny Gray or, you know, a guy like, I'd love to see Johnny Cueto, but he's not going
to. You know, and the guy I'd love to see, and I know that the pieces they got have been pretty good, but Steven Matz, I sure as heck miss him. And I know Sean Reed Foley's been good.
Well,
and Yancy Diaz. You're not going to get Matz now. He's in Toronto.
Oh, no, he's happy and he's not having a bad year as well.
He's not having a bad year.
He still gives up his little runs here and there, but he's
7-3.
He's been holding his own.
4.26 ERA.
Yeah, no, he's been the consistent Steven Matz that we know of. But a little better up with the Blue Jays. So, you know, I really haven't examined who they would go after, but there are two things to this. Every team needs pitching, especially in when you're contending. We still have a ways to go before the non-waiver trade deadline, Mike. What are the pieces you have to give up that you're going to get back? And you don't want to borrow someone to give away what you're going to give away. And the Mets have done that over the last 3 years where they've given up some good, valuable players to get what they needed to fill a gap at the trade deadline. Some have worked, some have haven't. So nobody is going to come back to the Mets and say, hey, we'll give you this, but you got to give us that instead. That's what they're going to want. And really, who can the Mets give up to get a viable starter that will help them in that back end as we move along? It's something that I'm sure the front office is looking at every day. They're on the phones, and I know that they do it. They're going to do it the right way, and they're not going to spend stupidly, nor are they going to expend stupidly. I think they're going to do the right thing. This new regime seems to be really doing well, the Mets front office, from the analytical department.
A lot of calm. There was some drama.
Yeah.
The Porter thing, and then the sexual harassment, and some of the other stuff that the Athletic dredged up, which I thought, you know,
I think this is better. What they have now in the front office is better than what they had, and they're handling things the right way with the media, with the things that have been going on, with the adversity. Most of all, the way they've built this team with the depth that has kept this team where they are, true, the division is mediocre and everyone is struggling. And if the Phillies went on a big run or the Braves were capable to do what they had to do, perhaps the Mets wouldn't be where they are right now. But I'm not taking anything away from the way the Mets have performed this first third of the season, because this depth that they've got with all the injuries shows they are a team that will contend and be in there till the end.
You mentioned there's a lot of silliness in baseball. And I'll tell you, this sticky stuff, and you wrote about it at New York Sports Day. So earlier today, Ken Rosenthal reports that it's imminent. And maybe by the time this show is broadcast, it's already come down. But it's imminent that they're going to do some punitive measures for those pitchers that use sticky stuff. Something that's been going on.
Despite what Conforto said.
What did Conforto say?
Well, you know, he's claiming that they changed the baseball to all about the contracts. Alonso, right.
And I heard what Alonso said. I wish they'd stop messing around with baseball, stop messing around with the game. But, you know, and I'll get to that in a minute, because it's interesting how we talk about how offense is down, but you know, in 1988, the league averaged 3.8 runs per game,
right?
Which is kind of what the Mets are averaging now. I don't remember anybody complaining when I was a young fan in 1988. I don't remember. And there wasn't any sticky stuff, and maybe steroids were just being introduced. But what I laugh about is that we always have to go to the extreme in baseball. Here's a manager telling Rosenthal that maybe they should have TSA style check-ins for pitchers before they get into the clubhouse. I mean, what are they going to go through, like an x-ray machine? I mean, it's so absurd. And then here's the best part. If you get caught with the sticky stuff, they're going to confiscate your uniform. So I'm going to ask you, are they going to undress the guy on the mound like he's in Guantanamo Bay, and they're going to lead him out with his jock strap? I mean, come on.
It's insane.
The things they put, you know, they go from... Been
going on for years. I remember growing up with Gaylord Perry. I saw it. How many times Gaylord Perry had sticky stuff wherever it was. And, you know, this just goes to show more of the problem that MLB has. And this doesn't help them with the game. And they're trying to see, you know, what we got to do here. You know, it's either good pitching out there with the hitting or vice versa. And every time something like this comes up, it just makes Major League Baseball look more foolish and foolish by the day. I don't know where this is going to go. All I know is it's going to be implemented, Mike, and it's going to be trouble. It might slow up the game with something that they don't want. The umpires are going to have the discretion of doing this, I think I understand from what I read, in between innings during the TV breaks to see, you know, and they'll decide how many baseballs they're going to look at and examine. I mean, might as well just examine every baseball that goes into play if they want to do that.
Yeah. But Rich, I mean, think about what I just said. In 1988, the league averaged this is the National League. I didn't bring up the American League, but 3.88 runs per game. 3.88. The number one team in runs per game that year were the Mets, who won 100 games at 4.39. The Mets this year are averaging, and I'm flipping back and forth here, 3.86. So the Mets this year averaging like 0.2 of a run less than what the National League averaged in 1988. And the Mets in 1988 would be league average.
Yeah.
League average today. So I'm like, maybe we're overreacting. So sometimes the media creates the problem. Yes, the game is slower. Yes, there's less, you know, contact. I think the game is slower for a lot of little nuanced reasons. And some of that is just players taking more time, more thinking.
Commercialization. I look at the box scores every day, and I don't see many. I see a lot of games that have picked up the pace. I see times 225, 221. I'm not seeing many 3 hour 50 games. Well, the Met game today was as long as could be, but the game is picked up. I've seen a more rapid pace with the game time wise. And again, a lot of it is too, is if you're going to count the game delays, it's because of the commercials. I mean, you have three minutes of breaks in between innings. So it's just another one of those problems. The game will never be an hour and 50 minutes unless you're playing seven innings, which I kind of like the seven inning doubleheaders. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to favor the Mets if you got DeGrom and Stroman, and with some of the bullpen situation you got. Yeah. You know, we didn't even bring that up earlier. But with the sticky stuff, you know, you talked to some people at an article at New York Sports Day.
Right.
And look, it's out of control. I get it. And maybe they didn't intend with sunscreen and Gaylord Perry spit and rosin, one thing. Spider tack, Pelican dip grip, different situation. And Gerrit Cole basically, which I knew because I heard people say Houston taught a class on this stuff 3 years ago. I don't know how the media didn't pick up on it, if I knew it. Basically admitted it to the media. I think it's worse than steroids in the sense because it's fundamentally something that can absolutely enhance performance. Steroids, they don't always don't know what they enhance. Yeah, you make a guy have more energy, but if you can't hit, you can't hit. Mm-hmm. I know there was an enhancement with steroids, but to me, this is worse because this can be one-to-one scientifically implemented where steroids are implemented as a drug, but you don't know how that's going to translate to you on a field. You don't know how to be a better player.
No, we don't know, really.
You have no idea.
I mean, honestly, how many pitchers are using sticky substances, too? We just don't know that. We're all going on speculation until they caught red-handed. I mean, some of them had over the last few years. I bring up Severino of the Yankees and Giovanni Palacios. That just happened to him with the cap. Mike, this is a problem Major League Baseball has. Either the offense is not doing well or the pitchers are overpowering, which we've seen. It even gotten to the point this past week where you're seeing things on social media that have gone viral about Jacob DeGrom, that he's a part of this, and that's why his numbers are so phenomenal the way they are in this generation of pitching. So I don't know what to make of it. All I know is this. This is not as sticky as an issue, if you mind me saying that, as a steroid issue was. Because those guys, as I wrote, they were denying it, and they were caught red-handed in the end. And I used to see in the clubhouses years ago those illegal substances right above their locker stalls. I saw things, creams and everything else.
Right.
If pitchers wreck locker stalls the last few years, I haven't been there last year or this year, but prior, I saw things there too, but creams, that's it. I think they hit most of these guys were doing things that are hidden or – and some of the pitchers I have talked to over the last 2 weeks that I know, former and current, have not denied it to me. I'm not going to mention names, he says, but they said to me, just like one of them said to me, and I found this interesting. Again, we all do it. That was the comment. And I believe them. I do believe them. They all do it. And that might, again, just speculation, be contributing to the overpowering pitching numbers that we're having in baseball today. And contributing to six no-hitters.
But it's also, you know what? No. Information is power, and understanding heat zones with all the cameras that work on grips, understanding how to pitch. Technology and analytics has been so much more beneficial, I think, to pitchers because hitting's always going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
You could, you know, even if you know what's coming, sign stealing, right? You still got to hit the ball, and it's not easy.
Right.
It was a video of Jack Leiter. Here's an amateur. Jack Leiter throwing a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. This thing went, and I'm like, whoa. On the video, I'm like, whoa. I mean, it's amazing how hard it is to hit. So I think we oversimplify and try to say that's the smoking gun. If they want to legislate it because it's out of control, I have no problem with it. Is it going to create a 1999 offensive environment? No, of course not, because the steroid situation with energy levels and the ability to rejuvenate, not be tired, stay focused. I mean, those are things that you're never going to get back. You know, you can't, there's not enough Red Bull in the world to do that. So I think sometimes things are cyclical and we panic and then we try to retrofit everything.
Yeah.
Messing with the baseball to me is worse, I think. And I don't know, you know, Pete kind of came out of left field with the whole, you know, they're doing it for free agency. Look, guys, they don't have to mess around with the baseball. You know what they have to do to mess around with free agency? Close the wallet.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. Close the wallet.
Yeah. I mean, it's twofold here, and you're going to hear different sides of the story. And when this finally takes effect, which I think will be all implemented in the next week from what I read and heard today, I think it's going to be a lot of questions asked once the baseballs are being scrutinized more and once umpires are looking at taking balls out of play. And then I wait for the first suspension because of this. I want to see how the Major League Players Association reacts to this and how this is going to continue into their new collective bargaining agreement, which expires in December. And that's going to be a nasty war that I think really, not only because of the baseball stinky issue, but other things, it's going to delay the start of 2022 season. I think there's going to be a rift in the ranks and both stubborn parties where we're not going to have baseball right away next year. And I mean, that's just the way the game is. It explains a lot about sports and business right now and where it's going. And I think, you know, old school like you, Mike, I think it's, I can't accept it, but we're here and we have to accept it. And it is what it is, as they say, right?
Yep, absolutely. So what do you got coming up next? New York Sports Day, Latino Sports. I know you're heading down to Miami.
I'm going to be doing some boxing this weekend in Miami, this coming week, Teofimo Lopez title defense. And be writing some Mets stuff this week on New York Sports Day, so you can look out for that M Latino Sports. I'm out there, Mike. I'm not done and out. I'm still here. The relic is still here, Mike.
We love you having you on. The one guy from the Bronx that we could stand, because you might be the only Mets fan in the Bronx, you know?
I'll tell you the truth. No, there's more than one. I've come across a lot of them, especially if I walk around with a Mets shirt on and I see it and I hear it. There's a lot of enthusiasm for the Mets. And when it comes to the Bronx, it shows it even more. And Francisco Lindor is turning out. He's starting to get there. You'd like to see more home runs, and he's getting there, but he's getting on base more. And I don't know if you're going to see many more of those 0-for-3, 0-for-4 games from him. I think he's finally got it going, which is good. I just hope this team can get 100% healthy with the debt they have and everything else and win a division title. They've been long coming, and I think this team's got a lot of depth and a lot of ability to do it, Mike.
Well, Rich, listen, I appreciate you coming on this Sunday night. Be well. I'm glad to see you. Let's do it again. And a lot of baseball, a lot of stuff to talk about. I will have a lot of fun.
Stop being
this summer.
A stranger. I'd like to talk to you more.
All right, buddy.
Let's go Mets. I try not to be partial, but, you know, let's go Mets. All right?
We try to be fair and balanced here. Be well, Rich.
Always a pleasure. Bye.
That's Rich Mancuso. Good stuff there from Rich. All right, let's take a quick break. Come back. Final thoughts. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this. The Talking Mets podcast is available on many outlets, but the most popular is Apple Podcast. Hi, I'm Mike Silva, the host of the Talking Mets podcast, and I encourage you to leave a review about the program on Apple. Just rate it 1 to 5 stars, hopefully a 5 because why wouldn't you? And then if you have time, leave a review. It helps the podcast continue to grow and encourages others to take a listen. You can also email me at MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Hope to hear from you soon. And enjoy the rest of the show. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Great stuff from Rich Gibbon. Thank you. So, again, these are conversations, and nothing makes me happier than when, you know, somebody will reach out to me and say, hey, I was listening to your show, and the time flew by so fast. Because sometimes I look, you know, we do over an hour sometimes, and those are part in due to, you know, the team providing us with great content, but also the great guests that come on and the conversations we have. And I really enjoy them. And I always appreciate any time someone comes on and gives their time. And Rich is an old friend, great guy. Glad to hear he's doing better. He's covering teams, you know, like so many other people during the pandemic. Rich was grounded, you know, covering sports remotely. And when that part of your routine goes away, you learn to really appreciate it, I think, coming back. But you also feel for these guys because it's also your structure. And it's almost like, okay, what do I have? You know, it's tough. And Rich and I talked a lot about it. And it was frustrating for him. He understood why from a health and safety standpoint, but it was so frustrating. And now they're letting reporters back down on the field. And I don't know if Clubhouse is going to come back so soon. I think Zoom is going to be a component of coverage going forward with the teams. But be that as it may, you know, we'll see that. So Anyway, want to give a few shout-outs to a bunch of you know, individuals that were kind enough to leave reviews. John Reaney, Mike does a thorough job of evaluating what's going on. He has an honest perspective on the team's status. He raises interesting questions and keeps the listeners engaged in the show. Thank you, John, for leaving a review. 5 stars. Why would you give the Talking Mets 5 stars? I'm just joking. Josh S., Mike is both knowledgeable and fair, which is rare in today's media. While columnists in the Post and the Daily News root for drama and clicks, Mike is informative and accurate. I highly recommend the pod as an effective foil to the traditional media that covers the Mets. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for listening. Great 5-star review. Let's see. I actually had, I'm going through here, I'm going to my Chartable account, and ironically, there is a review from Billy1872. Mike is the kind of guy you can meet in a bar, and before you know it, it's closing time, and you've been there all day. Sure, he's media-type knowledgeable, but what comes across more than that is that he's a fan. A must-listen, in my opinion, for Mets all over, and especially of those of us in foreign countries. I think Billy's from the UK. Great stuff, Billy. Thanks so much. And that's the whole point of the show. I want to be objective. I want to be a, you know, independent media. You heard Rich say, let's go Mets, and, you know, we were laughing and joking. But deep down, that's what makes us good, because we can root for the team deep down. You know we're rooting for the team, not going to lie. Not rooting against them. And we can still be impartial and knowledgeable. And I think the passion comes through, and that's what's missing from those that cover teams but are disassociated from the product. I really believe that. And then G-Man37, I don't know if I gave you a shout-out last week. And if I gave you a shout-out last week, I will certainly, you know, hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with 2 shout-outs. But Mike Silva's Talking Mets is the go-to New York Mets podcast. Mike offers his frank review of the players, the team, and management on a weekly basis. Good place to check in on what's going on with the Mets and MLB. Been listening for a while and check weekly during the season. I think I gave you a shout-out last week. And I think you said that you only check in, you kind of check out in the off-season. Well, there's tons of fun in the off-season. Check back in every week, whether it's Christmas, New Year, Thanksgiving, 4th of July. So, hey, G-Man, we love you. So, there you go. All right, I want to thank everybody for joining me today. I want to thank our friend Rich Mancuso for taking a few minutes after the Mets game to have a nice conversation. Mike Silva's Talking Mets Conversations. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you get the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll be back with another podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.
Big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Say big on gelled one windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.